This is ESPN Radio.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty and Amber Wilson filling in for my man Mike Golic Jr., who's covering college football this weekend. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And right now we're going to go out on the Goodyear Hotline and be joined by Chris the Bear Felica, co-host of Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast. And Chris, we got to start off with a Big Ten matchup. Michigan, number 6 in the country. They're a 1.5 favorite against Penn State. Who do you like in this game? Where's the value in this matchup?
I think grabbing Penn State at home plus the points is probably the way to go here. I worry about Michigan offensively with the injuries that they have at running back with Corum and Donovan Edwards, who didn't play last week. They had injuries at wide receiver as well. And if you look at Michigan the last couple of times they've gone to Penn State, they haven't scored a point in the first quarter in either game. They've been outgained by 200 yards in those games. The Penn State defense that showed up in Columbus a couple of weeks ago shows up tomorrow afternoon at State College, I think Michigan's going to have a hard time scoring points. And I'm not sure that McNamara in that passing game will be able to have a ton of success on guys like Abdikady running the pass, rushing the passer, and guys like Porter on that defense. So I'm going to take the Lions at home.
You might worry about Michigan. Apparently the playoff committee does not worry about Michigan maybe as much as it should, but I digress. Let's move on, Chris. The Washington State Cougars, they're on the road against the third-ranked Oregon Ducks. The Ducks are 14-point favorites. How should bettors lean in this matchup?
This is a really, really tricky game, I think, for Oregon this week. Last week, you're on the road in Seattle against your biggest rival. You win a very ugly game. You didn't play very well. Bad weather. Anthony Brown didn't have a great game. Next week is the game that Oregon has to have in Salt Lake in order to continue their college football playoff hopes alive. Defensively, Oregon is really good, and I think that they'll do a good job. But go back over the last few years or so under Mario Cristobal, Oregon has not been a very good double-digit favorite at all. I think they've failed to cover like 7 or 8 in a row in this spot. And give Washington State credit. Ever since the situation with Nick Rolovich played itself out, the guys on the coaching staff who have remained and stuck with the team, they have done a great job getting the kids prepped and prepared and ready to play. And the kids have been prepared and played hard every week. They played some of the best football the last couple of weeks. So I think 14 points is too many here for Oregon to be laying. So I'm going to take the Cougs.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. And this college football preview is brought to you by AT&T. It's not complicated. Everyone deserves something new. So AT&T is giving new and existing customers their best deals on every smartphone, even the latest ones. And Chris, we got to look at this matchup with Arizona State. They're 5.5-point favorites on the road facing Washington. How do you like this matchup? How do you view this matchup?
Arizona State on the road here, I think it's a bad proposition. The Sun Devils basically won last week against USC, but by default, they basically just ran the ball up and down the field. And I'm not sure they're going to be able to go on the road in a bad weather type game, cold weather, and run the ball against a Washington defense that really did a good job on Oregon's offense last week. They just couldn't get anything going offensively of their own. You had situation on the coaching staff, no Jimmy Lake, changes as well. A lot of times we've seen this year with coaches that have been fired or situations on the staff where these teams, at least for one game, look at Washington State as an example, they stepped up and played pretty well. So I'm not sure I want to be laying 5.5 or 6 points here with ASU on the road here. Give me UW plus the points.
You're listening to Canty and Golic Jr. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. We're talking to Chris the Bear Felica on the Goodyear Hotline. All right, Chris, let's move on to Louisville, Syracuse. Louisville are 3-point favorites in this one. How do you see this one going?
Syracuse is a team that I think people every week seem to be expecting their run to end. I think they're the only team in the country which has covered every single game and gives you Babers and the team credit. This is a big year for Babers, and Syracuse's defense is better than Louisville. Syracuse has the best running back on the field in Tucker. Hearing things and reports that Malik Cunningham may not play or at least be very limited for Louisville. And if that's the case, that's a really bad sign for Louisville's offense against that Syracuse defense. But I like Syracuse here. Defensively, they have responded and been in every single game this year. And even if Cunningham plays, I'm not sure that Syracuse getting the points here isn't the right side.
All right, Chris, now we got to get to the marquee game of the weekend, certainly the marquee game in the ACC, the big matchup for this show. The number 9 Notre Dame Fighting Irish are 5.5-point favorites on the road against my Virginia Cavaliers. How do you like this game? Which way would you lean when it comes to the line?
It's really hard to bet this game without knowing the status of Brennan Armstrong, Virginia's quarterback. I've heard everything in between. He's going to play. He's not going to play. It's a cartilage thing in his ribs. It can't get any worse. But I wonder if the long play here, and I know you as a player probably hate hearing this, but like I wonder if like Virginia realizes and says, hey, we got a chance to go to the ACC championship game and not play Clemson. We could win an ACC championship if we get Brennan Armstrong healthy for the remainder of the ACC games and get our results into that game. So I wonder if that's going to factor into both Armstrong and Bronco Mendenhall's thinking here. But the one thing I'm fairly certain of, that even if Armstrong doesn't play or does play, I'm not sure that Virginia defense is going to be able to get many stops against Kyron Williams and Cone in the way that Notre Dame offense has been playing the last couple of weeks. I think at the very least, without knowing the status of Armstrong, I'd be looking at playing like a Notre Dame team total over. It'd be because I do think Notre Dame will score points. But again, and then if Armstrong plays, you would like Virginia's chances as well of going in a back and forth type game where they're going to get their own points. Well, but without the quarterback situation, it's hard for me to have a real strong stance on this game on the actual side of the game.
Yeah, Chris, I'm with you on the Virginia defense. At this point, I have more confidence in our basketball team being able to stop the Notre Dame Fighting Irish football offense. But, I mean, I hear you. I don't want it to be true, but I am a little bit nervous because I don't want to give Mike Golic Jr. the bragging rights. He'll never let me hear the end of it. But, Chris, we appreciate
none
a few minutes.
None of us want that to happen.
None of us want that to happen. None of us do. Worst case scenario. But, Chris, we appreciate a few minutes helping to break down the games for college football this weekend, man. Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care, Amber. Chris, take care.
All right, that is Chris the Bear Felica from Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast. Coming up next, Stephen A. Smith had something to say today that ran me hot when it came to Lamar Jackson. You'll hear what he said next, as well as my response. This is Canty and Golic Jr., Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty and Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. Presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And Amber, anytime you have a surprise performance or a shocking performance in the NFL like we did last night with the Dolphins upsetting the Baltimore Ravens, it lends itself to overreactions the very next day. And some of the things that I heard about the Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson, I wish I could say it's surprising, but it's not given the narrative of Lamar Jackson ever since he came into the National Football League. But one of the things that Stephen A. Smith had to say on First Take today really surprised me. Let's take a listen to Stephen A. on Lamar Jackson and what he can or can't do.
At this point in time, it doesn't matter what Lamar Jackson does in the regular season. We all know that. It's about what he does in the postseason. I'm talking to a champion here. I'm talking to a champion.
Two-time champion.
Did you all right.
Yeah.
Hey, and at the end of the day, so what I'm saying to you is this. Even though every game, week to week, is important, any given Sunday, we understand that about the National Football League. Champions play for what? They play for championships. The postseason matters. We already know what this brother can do in the regular season. The question is, can you translate that to the postseason?
Amber, forgive me for, you know, I don't know. If I might be mistaken, I might be wrong on this one. Didn't we see Lamar Jackson last year in the postseason against the Tennessee Titans, a division winner, go down to Nashville and pull off an upset win down there after everybody said Lamar Jackson and the Ravens don't have postseason success? Didn't he do that?
And when he did that, didn't we all say, okay, that narrative is over surrounding Lamar Jackson? And now we're still, by the way, week 10, we're having a discussion about whether Lamar Jackson can get it done in the postseason. Like, what are we doing? What is even the point of this at this point in the season, having this conversation with everything that we know Lamar has accomplished? And man, if we're not talking about what he can and cannot get done in the postseason, then we're talking about whether defenses have figured him out and whether, you know, last season is exemplary of that, and whether Lamar is ever going to return to, you know, 2019 MVP Lamar form. And these conversations around Lamar Jackson, at least in my book, Chris, we keep having them, and then he keeps shutting us down with these conversations, and he keeps proving people wrong. And at the end, it's like, why are we even setting him up to have to prove us wrong? Like, at what point does everyone just go, all right, that dude's really good, and full stop?
Exactly. And I guess that's my point. When we start trying to evaluate Lamar Jackson and quantify his team's impact on winning, because it doesn't look like what we see from conventional pocket passers around the National Football League, anytime you have a poor performance like we saw from the Ravens offense last night, we're so quick to, you know, talk about Lamar Jackson in a negative way. We move the goalposts when it comes to the evaluation and saying what he can or cannot do and how that style of play translates to success at the highest levels of the sport. Whereas I think we have to just actually accept it for what we actually see. Like, take it for face value. Lamar Jackson is the quarterback of the third ranked offense in the National Football League. He's top 10 in passing yards. He's top 10 in rushing yards. He's a singular talent. There is nobody in the NFL that does what he does. There is no running game in the National Football League that's built around the quarterback and the special things that Lamar Jackson can do. There's not one player that means more to their team's success than Lamar Jackson means for the Baltimore Ravens. It just so happens that last night they ran into a very good defense in Brian Flores, a very good coach that dialed up some X's and O's that Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator for the Baltimore Ravens, didn't have any answers for. But I don't look at that performance as an indictment on Lamar Jackson. I mean, coming into this season, one of the things people said about Lamar and the Ravens' style of play on offense was that they weren't going to be able to play from behind. That if this team ever got behind double-digit deficits, that they weren't able to come back because Lamar Jackson couldn't throw them back in the games. Well, he dispelled that this year. Lamar Jackson has got three double-digit comeback wins. A couple weeks ago against the Minnesota Vikings in overtime, they were down double digits. I want to say they were down 14 points twice in that game. Came back and won in overtime. The overtime win against the Indianapolis Colts on Monday Night Football, down 11 points in that game. Or how about the win against the Kansas City Chiefs early on in the season when their defense was decimated, especially their secondary? Lamar Jackson brought them back from double-digit deficit to be able to win that game. Every time we throw out one of these narratives about Lamar Jackson, he absolutely proves us wrong. So I don't understand why folks continue to insist to move the goalposts when it comes to the performance of the quarterback and his impact on his team winning.
Right. That's exactly what they're doing. They continue to move the goalposts. I think part of it is that you don't want to be wrong. And Lamar Jackson has, for whatever reason, been a polarizing player. And of course, there are some reasons there that we may know and may be able to recognize. But since his drafting into this league, he has been one of those players that people have doubted, no matter how much success he's had or what awards he has won or what we've seen with our own eyes. And so they kind of continue to doubt him because I think maybe sometimes it's hard to let go of that narrative. And especially if you're one of these people who's committed to the idea that Lamar Jackson is a player that you will be able to figure out at some point here. But in all reality, like last night, because we're having this conversation coming off of last night, the Ravens were bad last night. Fine. The Dolphins D was great last night, but Lamar Jackson wasn't actually the problem last night. Like, this whole conversation would be very different if, you know, Watkins hadn't coughed up a touchdown in the first half on a pass that he should have caught, or, you know, if he hadn't fumbled in the second half and that ended up being, of course, returned for a touchdown. Like, there were some plays last night where Lamar Jackson had his team in a position where they ended up, they would have ended up winning that game had his receivers actually made some simple plays. And we can have a conversation about whether it's a good thing Lamar Jackson's a leading rusher on his team. Like, there's conversations like that to be had around the Ravens, but doubting Lamar Jackson in and of himself, I find that conversation really tired at this point.
Kenny and Golic Jr. is brought to you by Goodyear, making the plays that move you forward. Goodyear, more driven. And Amber, you couldn't be more right. I mean, we keep talking about what Lamar Jackson can't do or what he hasn't done, and yet people fail to mention all the things that he has accomplished. Putting the MVP trophy aside, since he arrived in Baltimore, the Ravens are a double-digit win team, and they're a team that's going to be in the playoffs. You can set your watch to it. The Baltimore Ravens find their way into the playoffs. And coming into the season, with all the injuries that he had, Marcus Peters being hurt, having the injury to J.K. Dobbins and to Gus Edwards, back-to-back days, they've still found ways to be able to overcome all of those losses on the offensive side of the ball and overcome having one of the worst defenses in the John Harbaugh era of the Baltimore Ravens. Yet they sit here at 6-3, and they're in the conversation for best teams in the conference. All of that has to do with what Lamar Jackson has done. Not to mention some of the losses that they had along the offensive line, too. Let's keep in mind, they're missing Ronnie Stanley for the rest of the year. Ronnie Stanley, the all-world offensive tackle, he's not there. He's not available. Has it seemed to matter? No, because you have number 8 as your quarterback under center. And so I think that's what we have to look at when we start having this conversation about how good Lamar Jackson is and what the ceiling on the Baltimore Ravens exactly is. We can't look at these aberrations or these outlier performances when it doesn't look good like we saw last night. We have to put it into context. We have to take into consideration the full body of work. And I think when you do, you get a clear picture that Lamar Jackson is one of the best quarterbacks in the National Football League.
Yeah, you get a clear picture. Lamar's not the problem. And it feels like a lazy conversation when we keep trying to make Lamar Jackson the problem. Like, it's a conversation we've been having since 2018. We need to give it up at this point. Like, Lamar is that good of a quarterback, and he's not the problem. Even on a night like last night, where kind of everybody on that Ravens team is a problem, and he wasn't great last night either. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that this conversation's very different if a couple plays had gone very differently, and that wasn't really on Lamar Jackson because he didn't get a lot of help from his friends last night. The 10 points, I mentioned it earlier in the show, are the fewest that the Ravens have ever scored with Jackson as their starting quarterback. That is a good team with a good quarterback, and last night was an uncharacteristic loss.
It's interesting, Amber. We never have this conversation about Joe Burrow when he has a performance like he did against the Cleveland Browns. We don't even have this conversation about Justin Herbert when he had a performance like he did against the Baltimore Ravens. But that's just what they do to Lamar Jackson.
Well, I mean, anyway, those guys are a lot earlier in their NFL. Well, a lot earlier might be overstating it, but they're earlier in their NFL career.
They're all basically the same. They're the same age as Lamar Jackson. Joe Burrow is older than Lamar Jackson.
True.
But anyway, I digress. Coming up next, how do the moves made by the Rams and the Panthers yesterday impact the NFC? We'll tell you next after this word from Wendy's. Right now at Wendy's, see what all the hype is about with our new guaranteed hot and crispy fries. We're talking real, natural cut potatoes, perfectly sprinkled with sea salt and guaranteed to be hot and crispy down to the very last fry, or we'll replace them. These aren't just the typical fries that you add to a meal. These are fries worth adding a meal to. Abandon the old, cold, and soggy and head to Wendy's today, where your fries are guaranteed to be hot and crispy. At participating U.S. Wendy's, Canty and Golic Jr. with Amber Wilson filling in. Back after this. Well, he's not your quarterback of the future, but he's buying you a little more time, and he gives Matt Rhule something that he can sell to ownership in the fan base, which is a certain level of success that the franchise hadn't had in recent years.
This is ESPN Radio.
Football Friday here on Canty and Golic and Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty and Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And Amber, I want to get your reaction to the signings that we saw yesterday, because Cam Newton is having a homecoming, a reunion of sorts down there with the Carolina Panthers. And OBJ shocked the world by choosing the Rams over the Green Bay Packers, the Kansas City Chiefs, Seattle Seahawks, and his hometown New Orleans Saints. So what did you make of those two signings yesterday?
The Cam signing, I think, makes a lot of sense, and we probably should have seen it coming that they would give him a call when they were in a position of need, obviously, with the injury to Darnold, and so they give him a call who they have familiarity with, and obviously he's available, and they gave him more money than I think maybe we expected, although a bonus-friendly deal. So Cam gets to go back home to a place where he is beloved, and there's really no downside there. I mean, if you know, Darnold's out for 6 weeks. Like, you need a quarterback. Cam Newton, hopefully, he can bring that familiarity to that organization and really get something done. They are obviously still trying to compete here. And so they feel like they're good enough. And they've got, of course, the help and the stability with Christian McCaffrey. And they feel like they can put Cam in a position where he doesn't need to necessarily be Cam. Like, he doesn't need to be 2015 Cam. He just needs to be competent under center and help them manage the game. And they feel like they can actually make a run of things here. But if he doesn't end up in that position, you know, it's a one-year deal. And obviously, you're replacing an injured quarterback that there was a lot of question marks and people were down on anyway. So really a win-win situation, I think, overall. And then with OBJ, a lot of people were surprised about Los Angeles. Los Angeles just feels like Odell Beckham Jr. Mm-hmm. to me, right? Like, I think that has something to do with this. I think we underestimate with this generation of athlete, Chris, how much lifestyle does matter. I think that that's frankly representative of their generation generally. I mean, whenever you see all the statistics about millennials and Gen Zers, it's often that lifestyle is a paramount consideration when anybody in any industry is considering a job, and an athlete is no different. And so I think that the decision did somewhat come down to, hey, where do I want to live? Where do I want to be the star? You know, Los Angeles fits me well. And then also, they did give him more money, reportedly, than the Packers were willing to give him when he was going to be on a vet min. Like, the Rams did give him a $500,000 signing bonus. So he got a decent deal with them, from them, offer from them, reportedly, than over some of these other teams, you know, like a Green Bay, where everybody expected him to go. And of course, he still has a great quarterback who's been underrated most of his career throwing to him. The only surprise there for me is that he's not the number one. And that is surprising, I think, from what we know about OBJ. Like, if he had gone to the Pats, Chris, he would have been the number one target. Mm-hmm. And we know now, you know, he's playing alongside a dude right now who's in the running for MVP this season. So he's not necessarily going to be the number one out in Los Angeles. I just think he wasn't interested in the Patriots, probably, because you already had chemistry issues with Baker. And what, now you're going to go and you're going to have a rookie quarterback throwing to you? Like, I think OBJ probably wants that vet quarterback who he knows is good, and that's exactly what he's going to get out there with Stafford.
Yeah, Amber, I think you hit on the three most important things when it comes to Beckham. Quality of life is something that can't be understated when it comes to this decision. He keeps a home out there in the offseason. He spends a lot of time out there in L.A. So from that standpoint, that environment is a fit for him. I think the other thing that you just pointed out with Mac Jones and the Patriots, Odell didn't want to go to a situation where the organization is still trying to develop a quarterback. He wanted somebody that's more established. And Matt Stafford has proven himself to be a Pro Bowl level quarterback, if not an all-pro level quarterback, with the right supporting cast around him. So I feel like that, from that standpoint, that's a fit for Odell. I think the concern becomes whether or not Odell is going to have the amount of targets, the amount of touches, to be able to prove to teams around the National Football League that he's capable of still being a productive receiver, right? Because no matter what the Rams did to sweeten the deal in comparison to what Green Bay or some other teams might have had out there in the way of an offer, it's still a far cry from what he was making when he was playing for the Cleveland Browns or what he was making at the end of his tenure with the New York Giants. So this is also about setting himself up for what happens in the offseason in 2022 and making sure that the other 31 teams around the National Football League, or I guess we can kind of narrow that down to 29 because he's not going back to Cleveland or New York, those other teams realize that Odell Beckham Jr. is a viable option when you're looking for a number two or a really good number two or a solid number one receiver. So I think there's a lot of show and prove with that. And I'm curious to see how that's all going to work with the receiving core that seems like it's crowded with Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, and Van Jefferson. But let's hear Matt Stafford, Rams quarterback, on the OBJ signing, what he has to think about his new wide receiver.
Going to take you know, work for everybody to be on the same page, him to learn, you know, what we're doing and how we go about our business and you know, us two working together and all that kind of stuff. But you know, what he's able to do when the ball's in the air, it's, you know, he's proven it year after year, and he's you know, outstanding when the ball's in the air, going up and making catches. He's really good after the catch as well. When he can stay grounded and catch and run, you know, he's a professional. He's done this a long time. I've got, you know, no doubt that he's going to come out here and work his tail off for us, and we're going to work together and try and get us, you know, going as quickly as we can. But, you know, that's something that we're just going to have to see when he gets in here. But I'm definitely excited about, you know, having the opportunity to work with a guy like that.
Yeah, and that's what it is for me. Like, it's just going to have to be receiver by committee, and Odell is going to have to be a model citizen. Right, Amber? That has to be the case, because if he's not, then all of a sudden we're talking about three straight stops where Odell has a problem with the quarterbacks, or he's got a problem with how he's being utilized, and that's not necessarily the best sell when it comes to trying to find your next job after this season.
Yeah, I mean, of course Stafford's excited, right? I mean, who wouldn't be excited about having a Kupp, Woods, Jefferson, and Beckham to throw to? Like, what quarterback wouldn't be excited about that? As many targets as you can have is exactly what you want. The truth is, though, that Cooper Kupp is, of course, the team's number one receiver, but he also leads the NFL. He's the NFL's number one receiver right now. He leads the NFL in receptions, receiving yards, touchdown receptions. That dude's had an amazing season so far, and we're only 10 weeks in, and it's hard to imagine then that no matter what Odell Beckham Jr. does when he gets there, him fitting in is certainly not necessarily going to be the paramount concern immediately, because Stafford does have all those other weapons. So him getting Beckham the ball, like, Stafford doesn't care. He's going to get the ball wherever it's the best opportunity for them to win games. And right now, it's that chemistry that he has with Kupp, and it's hard to imagine that's going to be disrupted, because if it ain't broke, don't fix it, by the presence of OBJ. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in here. He is betting on himself, though. Obviously, I think we all think Stafford is a great quarterback. I think he should be seriously in the MVP conversation so far this season. And I think that was a paramount concern, where he just feels like, you know what, Stafford is good enough where he's going to be able to feed me the ball, even if it's not as much as I would get targeted somewhere else. He's going to be the better quarterback targeting me than, say, a place like New England, where that quarterback is still figuring things out.
Well, Mike Golic Jr. said this yesterday, and I'm going to echo it because I think it bears repeating. There are no excuses when it comes to Odell Beckham Jr. and why he couldn't have success, or why the Rams can't have success and ultimately compete at a championship level. Coming up next, the Dallas Cowboys were playing with house money until last week when they lost to the Denver Broncos. Will they bounce back this weekend? We'll tell you next. This is Canty and Golic Jr., Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Chris Canty and Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Tune in to ESPN Daily Podcast, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters. Presented by Supercuts. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily. Available wherever you enjoy your podcast. And Amber, we have a huge matchup coming up for the Dallas Cowboys, who are looking to bounce back after an embarrassing loss at home against the Denver Broncos, a loss that prompted owner Jerry Jones to say that his team came out as flat as he's ever seen any team in his history of being a part of the National Football League. And it feels like they're in a spot right now that they're going up against an Atlanta team that's trying to build some momentum. If the playoffs started today, the Atlanta Falcons would be in the playoffs as that seventh seed. So how do you see this matchup, and what do you think is going to ultimately end up being the key for the Dallas Cowboys to come out here and get on the winning side of it?
I think it's an interesting one, because I'm one who is not going to completely count the Falcons out. Now, I know that Matt Ryan is hoping that the Falcons get hot somehow here in the second half of the season, like, hey, the Atlanta Braves did, the team, across town from them. The problem with that being that they didn't retool their team at the trade deadline like the Braves did, because it's not quite the same in the NFL the way that it is in baseball. And that Falcons team, it's hard to really believe in. But for this particular matchup, obviously the Falcons are coming off of that big win, so some momentum there. And then the Cowboys are really injured. And that was part of the problem last week with the Cowboys. They had that really terrible performance against Denver, but Dak was coming back. He seemed off in that performance. So I do think Dak is going to fare better this week. But now you've got Tyron Smith out. You've got Randy Gregory out. You've got Amari Cooper questionable. Cedric Wilson has been limited also. Even the backup quarterback, Will Greer, is questionable for this matchup. So that is an injured Cowboys Cowboys team. So is there an opportunity there for Matt Ryan to capitalize on that? I'm one who's a big fan of Matt Ryan, not necessarily that Falcons team generally, but they have been improving week by week. And Matt Ryan is having a good season this season when you pull the numbers. So it's an interesting matchup. I just think it being in Dallas, you know, I do think that this is probably the Cowboys game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Cowboys defense is going to let the Falcons come in and run the ball to the tune of 41 carries for 190 yards like they allowed that Broncos offense to do. So I don't see that happening. And the Falcons, by and large, the entire season, they've been a one-dimensional offense relying a lot on Matty Ice and those receiving corps. And I think that's something that plays right into Dan Quinn's hands because we know that he has intimate knowledge of Matt Ryan being the head coach down there in Atlanta for 4 years and practicing against him every single day. Dan Quinn has tweaked his defensive scheme since he's left Atlanta, but he's still got, you know, the knowledge base in terms of understanding the things that Matt Ryan likes, the concepts that he wants to run, and the things that make him a little bit uncomfortable. So I'm interested to see the chess match between those two as this game goes on. But I think one absence for the Cowboys that's going to loom large is Randy Gregory, because they've got to be able to find a way to consistently put pressure on the passer. And I anticipate that Michael Parsons will be a more integral part of that pass rush plan that the Dallas Cowboys develop. But I think they're also going to have to rely on some guys coming from the secondary as rushers. You're going to see some of Jayron Kearse being a blitzer. You're going to see some Jordan Lewis as well. You're going to have to send extra rushers in order to create pressure on Matty Ice consistently. Not that that Falcons offensive line are world beaters, because they're not. But I think you're going to have to use more than just the front four to get after Matt Ryan. Osa Odighizuwa is having an excellent season, so he's going to have to play one of his best games of the year, given the absence to Randy Gregory. But to me, the game is going to come down to, can that Cowboys defense create enough pressure on Matt Ryan to get him off the spot, to make him uncomfortable? If they can, I imagine that this is going to be a relatively easy victory for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, Michael Parsons better rest before that game, because he is going to be asked to do everything in that game, fill in that hole. And that's really what the game plan is going to be here on D for the Cowboys. They're going to ask that younger class of guys to step up. Like, Dan Quinn is going to expect those guys to step up in Gregory's absence. And that probably is, like you said, what this is going to come down to. Obviously, they're trying to do it against a very good vet quarterback, but I do think that they probably will be able to do it in Dallas. And then also offensively, just Dak being that much better coming off of that calf injury. I really think that's why he seemed off against Denver. It just seemed like a weird game against Denver. I'm not reading too much into that. So I do think the Cowboys probably take it here.
Yeah, I think the Denver game is the outlier, the aberration. It's not the norm for the Cowboys. This is one of the best offenses in the National Football League, and Dak has been one of the best quarterbacks all year long. So I don't anticipate that's going to be consistently who they are. But I do have to ask you this question, and looking at this matchup, who's this game more important to? Is it more important for the Falcons, or is it more important for the Cowboys?
I think it's more important for the Cowboys. I mean, where are the expectations for a 4-4 Atlanta Falcons team? I think for a 6-2 Cowboys team, when of course you're also the Dallas Cowboys because all eyes are on you anyways, but Dak got the bag and everyone has the expectations that they do around the Cowboys this season, I absolutely think it's more important for the Cowboys.
Yeah, I want to lean that direction, but I also acknowledge the Cowboys are going to be in the playoffs by virtue of playing in the NFC East, whereas the Atlanta Falcons, they're in the NFC South. And you can make a case for all of those teams being able to make a playoff push. Even the Carolina Panthers losing their starting quarterback, it feels like an upgrade by being able to sign Cam Newton. We'll see what they end up doing. But that's a team that's beat the two wild card teams in front of them in the Atlanta Falcons and the New Orleans Saints already this season. But coming up next, the Dolphins got a massive win last night against the Ravens. Is there something to build on for the Fins? We'll tell you next. This is Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.